This is episode 83 of Ethics and Culture Cast from the University of Notre Dame's DeNicola Center for Ethics and Culture. Welcome to episode 83 of Ethics and Culture Cast from Notre Dame's DeNicola Center for Ethics and Culture. I'm Ken Hellenius, the communications specialist at the center. In this episode, we chat with three of our graduate Soren fellows, the Nigerian priests Father Ken Amadi, Father Joachim Azonze, and Father William Orby. They are the primary organizers of the Church Life Africa conference series, which has been partially funded by the DeNicola Center for the past few years. Let's sit down together to learn about how this program is awakening a new generation of theologians and ministers among the lay faithful in Africa. Fathers, I am delighted to welcome you to Ethics and Culture Cast. Thank you for coming to be with us.
Thank you, Ken.
So tell us a little bit about yourselves. Where are each of you from? When were you ordained? Let's start there.
So my name is William Orby. I was ordained on the 7th of February 2015 for the Archdiocese of Abuja in Nigeria. Abuja is the capital city of Nigeria, and I worked for 2 years at a parish in Abuja, and then I went to St. John's University to do a master's in systematic theology. And I've been at Notre Dame since 2019.
Fantastic. Father Ken.
I was also ordained on February 7th, 2015, alongside Father William and 15 others. It was a big class.
Big class, yeah.
And I did my master's here at Notre Dame, and now I'm in my fifth year in the PhD. It's been really great to be here. And I've been a Soren Fellow since 2018, so long time.
Long time, yeah. Father Joachim.
Yeah, Joachim Azonze, and ordained a priest July 8, 2017, Newi Diocese, in the southeastern part of Nigeria. And 2 years after that, in 2019, I came to Notre Dame for the Master's in Theological Studies program. So did a master's here in 2019, but also like did minor in gender studies, in digital cultures, and in peace studies. So right now I'm doing a doctorate in peace studies and theology. Okay. Yeah, and been a Soren Fellow since 2019.
Excellent. Working on peace studies and
theology.
And theology. And what is your particular area of study?
Yeah, so it's a dual program. So you're working on both the peace studies program, the peace studies route, and then the theology route. So in theology, I'm working specifically on liturgical studies. That's like my home in theology. But bringing them all together, really looking more and more into like drug crisis, drug violence, and the role of theology in those kinds of hard reality.
And you've been doing research like in Las Vegas this semester.
Yeah, absolutely. Because there is also a VR component of my research on virtual reality. And what I'm actually looking at is the possibility of like the use of virtual reality technology for dealing with folks or for working with folks who deal with addiction. So it's a research that really gets its inspiration from EMDR. Using EMDR for like PTSD, right?
And that's a lot of letters, so you're gonna have to
oh yeah, yes. Sorry, yeah. So actually, like a neuropsychiatry study of like addiction shows just how addiction can mess up with the neural circuit, right? And so, what does dealing with addiction mean when and if this actually, in some ways, like reconfigures or messes up neural circuits? And so, I'm taking seriously the question that healing or journeying with folks doing addiction needs to, in addition to other things, right? Take care of what does this neural dimension mean as well. And so I'm thinking of the possibilities of virtual reality technology for helping not like to manipulate neural makeups, but for helping folks in this journey of like struggling with addiction. So part of the things I'm doing, hoping to do in Las Vegas, will be to dive deeper into like the virtual reality program in University of Nevada, Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. They have an amazing virtual reality program. So I'm hoping to get connected to that and see what possibilities for learning are there, and then hopefully get into that for as part of this research too. Yeah. In addition then to like the field work aspect of it in North Las Vegas with folks struggling with drug addiction.
Yeah. Wow. Father William, what do you study here at Notre Dame?
I'm doing a PhD in theology, peace studies as a minor, but I'm also very interested in literature, African literature. So in theology, I'm in the World Religion, World Church area, which is a combination of everything all that person wants to study. Comparative theology, comparative religion, African theology, a bit of patristics. So I do a lot of things.
Yeah.
I do a lot of things. My present research is on the theology of hope, like finding theology of hope in secular African literature, you know, literature of protest and resistance as signs of hope. And then I find this as like the context for doing theology in Africa or every other post-colony, you know. So, mm-hmm. so yeah, that's essentially what I do. Wow. Right now.
Fantastic. How about you, Father Ken? What are you studying?
I work in liturgical studies and sacramental theology, but also primarily in ritual studies and ritual development. And I do a minor in sociology of religion. So my research focuses on ritual development and the evolving religious imagination of Nigerian Christians. So I work on how rituals develop and change over time, what is responsible for changes in rituals, and how do these changes reflect wider dynamics of how Christians behave through different times and places. In particular, I'm studying a ritual called Thanksgiving, which has nothing to do with turkey and does not necessarily happen in November. So the ritual of Thanksgiving is a moment in the Mass, or even in non-Catholic contexts in their own service, when individuals who identify something specific that God has done for them come forward in church in the context of social prayer, in the context of the Mass, bringing material gifts ranging from livestock and foodstuff and anything else that they consider valuable that they want to present to God in the church as a way of giving thanks to God. And this is pervasive all across Nigeria. And I hear also that even in Cameroon, this is also done just as much as it's done in Nigeria. So it's taken for granted that this is a local way of worship, a local way of giving thanks in the context of the Mass or in non-Catholic context, in the context of, you know, Christian worship. And so I wonder in my studies how this ritual started and how did it find a place and, you know, unobtrusive place in the Mass. But then looking at the wider picture, how does this local ritual feed into the church's lex orandi, which is the church's rule of prayer? How do local rituals constitute richness and continued development of the church's law of prayer? So I study ritual experts like Catherine Bell and Ronald Grimes and all of those people. And then on the sociological side of things, I use sociological method, mainly ethnography, including in-depth participant observation. So I meet people in the field where they are worshiping and I ask them all sorts of questions about why they do what they do. Why do you have to bring a cow instead of a goat to thank God? Why do you have to bring a bag of rice instead of two bars of yam, you know. So I do that. I do also interviews, semi-structured interviews for my research. And so analyzing all of this sociologically and empirically, then I bring sociological findings in contact, in conversation with ritual theories and theological theories.
Yeah. I'm reminded, of course, of the temple ritual included a thank offering.
Yes.
Was one of those that was offered in the context of Jewish worship in the temple.
Absolutely.
That's fantastic.
But in contemporary worship, we don't, especially in the West, we don't find, you know, those kinds of expressions.
We pass the basket and that goes up with the gifts and that's supposed to be a representation. But you're saying it's much richer in Nigeria.
Yes. And the ritual of Thanksgiving is actually to be distinguished from presentation of gifts for the mass,
okay.
Not unconnected to it, but distinct from it.
Sure.
So this is all part of what my research is going to figure out, whether there is, you know, some kind of ritual correlation between those two and how those two have gone apart now. And what does that mean for the broader outlook of what, you know, the liturgy represents for these people?
Wow. I don't know that my parish could handle everybody bringing a cow or a goat.
Or a turkey.
Or a turkey.
Yeah, I have to settle for a turkey. Well, that actually leads into what is the state of the faith in Nigeria? I often read about priests and students being abducted and ransomed, but I know that obviously I'm getting only a tiny sliver here in the United States of what the situation on the ground truly is. What is it like to be a Catholic Christian in Nigeria today?
Yeah. First of all, there is no single story, you know, as far as faith in Nigeria is concerned, there is no single story. So it's both joyful and challenging, you know. It can be risky to be a Christian in certain places. In other places, it's more like the pop culture. You know, everyone is a Christian and it's kind of abnormal not to be a Christian in those places. So first of all, I would say there is no single story.
Mm-hmm.
So Christianity in Nigeria is really flourishing, you know, in spite of everything. So like Ken's research on Thanksgiving, you can even use that as a measuring rod for how flourishing the Christian faith has been, you know, this last 100 years since the third phase of missionary evangelization of that part of the world. So the faith has grown. A number of people go to church every weekend. Vocation to the priesthood is thriving. There is church almost in every corner of the streets in Nigeria, you know. So
like
yeah,
Starbucks in America.
Exactly. Yeah, so that's like one side to the whole Christian experience, the flourishing. But then there is also the challenging aspect, you know, to being a Christian in Nigeria, especially in some parts of the country. The northeastern part of the country seems to be the most troubled region, but the north generally can be very challenging for Christians. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
I would say that Christianity in Nigeria is a very beautiful thing. And sometimes it can also seem natural, especially contemporary Christians and young people for that matter. There is a dynamic of Christian worship and Christian belonging in Nigeria, which tends to be saying, I don't know what else I would be if I weren't Christian. You know, William, you know, called it like a pop culture. You know, people are cultural Christians depending on where they are. And in Nigeria, basically, you are either a Christian or a Muslim. Everything else is in the very small minority. Not that it's absent, but there is a small minority of any other religious or non-religious expression other than Christianity and Islam. In any case, this reality can also be challenging or dangerous. It's not something that is to be taken for granted. That the vast majority of people who are not Muslims in Nigeria are Christians also calls for a closer look at why it is so. It calls for a closer look at what could be possible or what could happen if these people encounter some kind of real crisis of the faith. You know, we have had waves of different developments. For instance, when Pentecostalism came to Nigeria, it brought a new reality, a new dynamic to Christianity. And that new dynamic was that it promised prosperity when it was first developing. Of course, Pentecostalism goes beyond prosperity today. It would be unfair to just describe Pentecostalism as a prosperity gospel. It goes much more than that. But I know that when I was growing up as a kid, my experience of Pentecostalism at its earliest stages was an experience of a Christian expression of faith that promised prosperity. And I saw neighbors and friends who became Pentecostals because crusades and revivals were staged at street corners, which included not only prayers and miracles, but also giving out of gifts of food and clothes and material things. So it was attractive, right? And it has continued today, but has become also a phenomenon of its own, including many other good things and good works. Also including, if you like, developing theologies. Pentecostalism has its own developing theologies, some elements of which are great, others perhaps not so great. In all of this, I think that there needs to be a more serious attention given to how deep or otherwise the faith is in this kind of climb. And I'll just leave it at that, but we'll pick it up again when we talk about, you know, Church Life Africa. Sure. I'm sure you're coming to that.
Of course. You provided a great segue there. You gentlemen have been the primary organizers of a series of conferences called Church Life Africa. So first off, tell us a little bit about what these conferences have been, like what the agenda has been. Father Joachim, how about we have you lead off?
Okay, we shared about the faith of the church in Nigeria, especially the faith of the Christian faith in Nigeria, as something, like Father William said, not a single story. And so this vortex of gifts, hopes, joys, pains, doubts, you know, struggles, yeah, all of those together. And for us too, who are products of this faith, right, finding ourselves here and coming here and seeing really a certain hope placed on this faith back home, which we carry ourselves to, right? And seeing that not just for us, but also that in a sense for the universal church, there is a certain hope placed on the Christian and especially the Catholic faith, right, back home. And we hear things like, yeah, the hope of the church is in Africa, is in Nigeria, which actually has, I think, the most populous number of Christians in Africa. I could be wrong, but I think so. And for us, the question is like, what does this mean? Something that these conferences have really enabled us to see ourselves and do is to really see how rich are the gifts that the Lord has planted back home, to see the excitement and the enthusiasm of young people, to have the privilege of just being the hands of the Holy Spirit to spark up a setting fire, to see how just a little support, right, offered to many young people back home can do way more than we can ever imagine, right? And literally to be surprised by the faith that we ourselves share, to be surprised, baffled by what can happen if folks just get a little support. And why I say this is, for example, this concluded conference past summer. So we had the conference in Abuja. So we had the opportunity of bringing together young people, because the target of this conference is young lay Catholics. And the number of those who applied for this was way beyond what we could even. We had to even go extra and extra over our budget just to accommodate just some percentage of the wealth of people who applied, right? And that for us alone was just so mind-blowing. And then to see how this little seed sparked up so much excitement and enthusiasm and response and energy, right, was just incredible for us. But I'll leave Father William and Father Ken to talk more about both, like, the organization of the conference and other things that the conference did. Yeah.
Fantastic. Father William, tell us about it.
Okay, so I love to describe Church Life Africa as the probing of theology in Africa, but also the probing of faith in Africa. So it's just being alive to the reality of the richness of the faith, but also not taking for granted the many challenges of the faith in Nigeria, in Africa rather, and then looking into the future. So it's more like something that is very futuristic, you know, but begins from the here and now, begins from the reality on ground. Just like you said, you know, the richness, but also the challenges and struggles. You know, how do you theologically respond to what you see, what you know, and then how do you theologically prepare for the future? So the focus, of course, is on non-priests, you know, non-religious, you know, how do you get non-priests and non-religious? You know, I'm talking about people who belong to religious congregation, you know, to get involved in theologizing, to be able to recognize themselves as part of the theological heritage of the church, you know, recognize theologizing as a ministry, you know. Of course, the inspiration came from the West, the American church, but also the American university and theology department, where you essentially find more lay people than priests doing theology, studying theology, or teaching theology. So, yeah, so I like to see Church Life Africa as probing both faith, but also probing the theological currents, you know, in Africa. And not just taking for granted that the church is rich, the church is flourishing, you know, but what about the future? What about the future of the church? How do you prepare for, you know, a possible decline, you know, if you don't take things serious right now, you know, and so on and so forth. But what you see when you attend Church Life Africa conference is just the excitement among young people, you know. In this just concluded conference, at a point, you find young people say to each other, you're a theologian, you know, I'm a theologian, you know. And then it's just that realization that to do theology or to be a theologian, all you need is just the faith, you know, be a Christian. And then think, you know, that's theology, that's theologizing.
Words so, about God.
Exactly. So, yeah. So it was really an exciting conference, you know, as an organizer, but also as one who really tried to participate. I can testify to its success, especially the excitement among those who attended from across Nigeria.
Yeah. Fantastic.
Father William and Father Joachim and I really were greatly inspired to start Church Life Africa. Two things inspired us. The first was the long-expressed hope that we have seen and heard about to the effect that the future of the church is in Africa. We've heard popes, bishops, lay people, especially in the West, talk about and really express this hope for a long time. And coming to Notre Dame, our eyes became opened to the reality that not really much has been seen in Africa in terms of investment in this hope. Or to put it even better, more could be seen in terms of investment in that hope. The second was, coming to Notre Dame, we realized that 70 to 80% of those who taught us theology were lay people. But it's never so in Africa. We've been exposed to almost entirely only priests, and to a smaller extent, religious, do theology and teach theology in Africa. And so we began to wonder, putting these two realities together, if Africa will be the future of the church, where are the lay people who constitute over 90% of the population of Africans? How are we nurturing their faith? For the most part, we tend to have left this faith as a raw reality that is yet to be fully nurtured. We think about the enormous resources that go into theological education in the West. We think about the enormous opportunities that are available in the West to lay people in particular. And we thought it would be really important to take seriously this hope that the future of the church is in Africa. And we do believe in that hope. But we can also do something to take that hope up and to begin to invest in it and invite others to do so. That was how Church Life Africa was birthed. And we thought of where to begin. We thought, first, we need to even begin to determine whether there is the need that we're trying to create or whether we are the ones manufacturing the problem. And so we started Church Life Africa Summer Conference in August of 2022. The first natural place to knock was Center for Ethics and Culture. Inspired by the CEC Fall Conference, we thought that we also wanted to create a similar kind of space in Africa where scholars, practitioners, young people especially could come together to find a voice, to listen to others, to share their ideas and convictions about the faith, but with a view to equipping them theologically, with a view to equipping them in diverse other ways, but the melting pot would be theological formation. And so the CEC was gracious to grant us the first seed grant with which we took off in 2022. We were hoping to get a few people, but to our delight and surprise, there were over 100 people. We could not contain the number. We had to literally turn some people down, unfortunately. And so this year, we decided to build on what we did last year. And when we came back to Notre Dame and gave the report, it seemed like the report began to, you know, multiply, like, I mean, to make interest multiply like crabgrass. And so now we have the McGrath Institute for Church Life, we have Kellogg Institute for International Studies, and the Department of Theology itself join the CEC in supporting Church Life Africa. So this year at the conference, we're able to bring together over 200 young people. And this is not all the number that applied. Again, we turned people down this year. But the beautiful thing is that we're able to establish by these 2 years of conferences that the need is there. We have a solid proof of concept, not only in the numbers, but also in the quality of young people who came, in the kinds of questions they asked, in how much they engaged speakers, many of whom were drawn from top-notch professors here at Notre Dame, the likes of John Cavadini, David Fergebeg, Kimberly Belcher, our own Father Paulinus Odozo from Nigeria, and many others, but also theologians from back home in Nigeria, from the Catholic University. Women also who work with the Catholic Bishops Conference who may not be necessarily trained in theology. But what all of this revealed to us was that there is real hunger. There is real hunger for theological education. As William and Joachim pointed out, all of these young people were beginning to say, can't we too be theologians? We do want to be theologians. Is it enough for us to attend this conference and be called theologians? So looking forward, looking ahead, Church Life Africa is hoping that beyond just hosting these annual conferences, we also want to create opportunities for young lay people across Africa to study theology, to be trained in catechetical leadership, to be part of Catholic public witness. And also, we have a component that empowers, that creates social engagement. We have a component for social impact, you know, which looks at the economic implications of the lives of these people, right? There is the saying, primum vivere, deinde apostolicare. You know, you have to live, you have to eat, you have to survive before you preach the good news. Only living people preach the good news. So we also want to be able to, you know, think about and be concerned, genuinely concerned about the livelihood of these people. You know, Africa is known to be a place of suffering, but it's also a place of promise. It's known to be a place of crisis and poverty, but it's also known to be a place of wealth and opportunities, only if we are able to help nurture these opportunities, right? So that's all of what Church Life Africa is doing.
Fantastic.
And actually, if I may also, a very important part of what we do, and this is something we're doing consciously, is this. The University of Notre Dame has been very generous to Africa and to African Catholics. We are all beneficiaries of the generosity of Notre Dame to come to this, you know, without modesty, best Catholic university in the world to study. And we say that with pride. We thought that we owe it as a duty to ourselves and to Notre Dame to be the hands and feet of Notre Dame, to go back and give to Africa for and on behalf of Notre Dame, to do much more than Notre Dame could have done if they were trying to do this from here. We who are Notre Dame trained can then make greater impact in Africa for Notre Dame. And it's important that we're making this point.
I'm sure Dolly Duffy and the Alumni Association would love to have a Notre Dame club in Abuja. And we can come and do a talk this year. Wonderful. Well, what's next for each of you? I mean, your guys have got to be getting near the end of your studies, though, too, right? Who graduates first? Who finishes first?
The one who finishes their dissertation first.
Now, what will you do with your degrees when you're done?
I think it's not a matter of what we will do with our degrees. It's a matter of what we already are doing. Life is a process. Impact is a process. We do not believe that we have to wait until we're done with our degrees to begin to do the things we're supposed to be doing for life, for God, and for the world. So Church Life Africa is something we hope to continue to do for the rest of our lives. So whether now or when we graduate, we will work on these things that we have laid out for Church Life Africa: teaching, working with young people, you know, working with institutions here in the US and institutions in America. In fact, Church Life Africa is built on a model of solidarity and bi-directional relationship between the church in the US and the church in Africa.
You talked about your own educations in theology, you realize, were primarily taught by priests and religious. Is that a sociological phenomenon that only priests and religious can be theologians? That is part of what Church Life Africa is working to educate about? Or is this just there haven't been a lot of lay theologians, and so the average faithful have not really thought about it?
Yeah, I think the major issue is there is no market for lay theologians right now in Nigeria. You know, you do theology as a lay person, you probably won't find a job, you know, right, that can really put food on your table and give you the means to take care of a family.
Kind of like what Father exactly was just saying, right?
Yeah. Exactly. Whereas for priests, you do theology because you're a priest, you know, and then you are under obedience to the bishop who asks you to go teach in a seminary or in a Catholic university for little pay, you know, just a stipend. So it's easier for a priest to find a job, you know, and sustenance teaching theology than for a lay person. I think that's like the main reason you hardly find lay theologians in Africa, especially in Nigeria. I can speak very, very more about Nigeria.
Is this something where Church Life Africa is both exposing a need, but also exposing the desire? The very desire to do this is itself awakening a new generation and a new need.
Exactly.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with Father William, and I like the word you use, awakening, right? And if we could like circle back a little bit, even historically, in many places, whether in Europe or even in America, Latin America, and like in Africa, right? There is this connection between theology and clerics, right? Mm-hmm. Where historically theology has been like the space for clerics, right? So that's even the foundational writings and works on theology are written by clerics, right?
Other than Justin Martyr, but yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good word.
He's the only one that came to mind, so don't press me on that.
Yeah. I promise I wouldn't. Yeah, and so it's for us to like, on the one hand, taking seriously that historical dimension, but also in a way that emphasizes for us then a gift or a richness that we've received from the American church. Because in coming here to study Notre Dame, then we see something different, right? We see that, oh it's possible, right? That, and we are beneficiaries of this. We've seen and we've experienced like theology taught by mothers, mothers, right, who have children, by, we've seen husband and wife like teach us theology. We've seen a family, like we've seen that, oh, this is not only for priests, right? And so it's like to be exposed to something new and different, but even more beautiful. And even to begin then to ask ourselves and to reimagine what it would look like when the theological voices of the church take seriously everyone, right? Where the theological wealth of the church is actually one that holds together the voices of people from their different positionalities, right? And then to take the same question back home. So what does it mean for us back home if the voice of the theological voice of the church from Africa is not only the voice of priests or sometimes nuns, but also the voice of fathers, mothers, children, people who are not also priests, right? But who the Holy Spirit surely does speak through, right? And so that is really like to trace it like both historically, but also like how we've benefited from like the church here in America, and then to then become hopefully an instrument for this awakening. So just as we ourselves have experienced some kind of awakening by being here, like what does it mean then to inspire an awakening, like you said, back home, where it could be taken for granted that this is actually the preserve of priests or religious, right? But now, like, what does it mean to invite people to see that, well, maybe it's not. Maybe historically it used to be, but what if it is better that it is not, right? And then, as Father Ken said, some of the speakers, for example, we are not priests. Most of them, in fact, we are not priests, right? And so to even see that this is possible, right? Last summer, for our last conference on solidarity with the church in Africa, we had one of our speakers who was the daughter of another speaker for the conference who was of the father. So, and that is Katie Cavadini, right?
Oh, sure.
Coming to speak after the father, John Cavadini, had spoken. It was so beautiful. And something that Katie did, which was amazing, was before the speech, she introduced the entire participants to her family. It was so lovely. There was Tony Pagliarini, there, all the kids. And someone was like, wow, can you tell us what your family is like, where you have all these theologians, right? And so just impressing on people even more than speaking, right, that this is a possibility. And so creating that that awakening is for us something important that I would say the conference has achieved. And then the question then is, is it possible for this awakening to cause some kind of opportunities for lay faithful who do theology, some kind of economic opportunities? And it's then back to the chicken and the egg question, right?
Right.
Don't we have the market because well, they don't do theology, or they don't do theology because they don't have the market, right? And so this is more like throwing in an initiative that comes right into the chicken and egg puzzle, right? And so the economic aspect of the initiative that Father Ken talks about comes right into this, right? So that, like in the US, where we see that lay people who do theology are actually taken care of by the work they do in theology, right? What would it mean for Church Life Africa and for theological formation in Africa, where lay people who also like work theologically also receive some form of livelihood from the work that they do while enriching the theological heritage of the church?
Yeah. Fathers, this has been a fantastic conversation. I want to go, actually, at some point.
Let's go.
I'm going to have to apply for a grant and see if I can join you for a future conference, because this is really, really, it's exciting. And it's exciting to see the effect of your being here. Being here at Notre Dame, you're being connected to the DeNicola Center, you know, as Soren Fellows, and being able to be supported by the work of the center, and then have that bear great fruit
sure.
that some of us may never see. Yeah, with our own eyes. So thank you so much for coming and sharing this story and for keeping the work going, even after you graduate.
Well, this would be an opportunity to throw it out in advance that Church Life Africa Summer Conference 2024 is in the works, and we hope to get all of our participants and speakers to Nigeria in person. And we've been intentionally growing in phases. The first year we were limited to Abuja, and the second year we spread to the wider Nigeria with people coming from nearly 40 different dioceses all across Nigeria. Next edition, 2024, we're hoping to open it up to the wider Africa. So people will come from all over Africa, young people, lay people, to participate in Church Life Africa Summer Conference. And that becomes also for us an opportunity to begin to identify individuals who are interested in and can do long-term substantial theological education, and those who might be better fitted for, you know, mid-level catechetical formation or mid-level theology. So all of these things are ways that we're intentionally going to be deploying these young people to serve the church. It's more like what young people in Africa look like. The parable that we heard of this past Sunday. The landowner goes out, puts people in his vineyard, and he walks around at another time of day and sees people standing by. And he says to them, "What are you doing here? Why are you not working?" And they say to him, "Because no one has hired us." And what does the master say? "You too, go into my vineyard and I will pay you what is just." We want to be the voice of Christ saying to these young people who are standing and looking for opportunities, "You too, go into my vineyard, and the Lord will pay you what is just." That's part of what Church Life Africa is going to be doing. So join us and support the cause for investing in the future of the global church, the vital sign of whose is richly present in Africa.
Amen.
Thank you.
Well, we will put a link to the Church Life Africa website in the show notes here for the podcast.
Okay. Okay.
And so... that's fantastic. Thank you.
Thank
you so much for coming to share the story.
Thank you, Ken.
Thanks for being here. Thanks for putting this all together.
Of course.
Thank you.
Thank you to Fathers Ken, Joachim, and William. Find links to the Church Life Africa conference series and to a story about their work in the show notes. Subscribe to Ethics and Culture Cast so that you can always get the latest episodes by visiting ethicscenter.nd.edu/podcast. We would love your feedback. Please review the show on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, and email your suggestions to cecpodcast@nd.edu. Our theme music is "I Dunno" by Grapes, licensed under the Creative Commons Attribution License. We'll see you next time on Ethics and Culture Cast, Until then, make good decisions.